Well, today we're going to be studying Job. 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 tell me a little bit what you know about Job.
He had a lot of bad luck.
He did. If it weren't for bad luck, he'd have no luck at all, right? Anybody else?
He was faithful.
He was faithful. Yes. Anybody else?
I'll make the end of it. Mm-hmm. But it was in our family when we went over and said, Laura, I was struggling, and she wouldn't tell me what was wrong, so eventually we just drove over there. But they're really struggling with how some past relationships are coming in, you know, just the baggage stuff, mm-hmm. and he's mad at so-and-so, and we're getting mad at her. That in saying it was in our case, but really not. But say if I was mad at her ex, and I'm just like, what are you talking to him for? Blah, blah, blah. And I kept telling George, I was like, what you're doing, this is all you're doing. It's not hurting Dusty. It's not doing this. And you're bound by this. And at the end of Job, it says, and the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. And also the Lord gave twice as much as he had before. And so what was he captive of? It was, you know, we don't know, we're not behind the scenes looking at Job, but was it, it's not a God of vindication, it's a restoration. So if I'm having a struggle with this relationship or that relationship, and I'm praying to this God, why don't you just shut him up, God, or stop him or something? This is not God. God's will is for me to actually care for that person. And love that person, no matter what they say to me, no matter what they do to me. If I'm to be obedient to God, I will love that person and actually pray for that person, no matter what they've done to me. And this is, if we read through this, Job's friends were kind of like, you know, all this on Job. But when
what did you do? What did you do to make God mad?
Your fault.
Yeah.
But when Job prayed for him, the captivity was released off of Job's heart.
That's good.
We never got really through to him. We did leave without a question. Yeah, I think they looked bad at him. I did go hug him.
And he hugged you back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Laura, I was talking to Tamara came back there and asked me to be, lower the voice because Elena's in there. And I wasn't yelling. She came out and Laura said, let me guess. George sitting on the bed and Dad is hovering over him. Tamara said, yeah, and Laura goes, oh God, that's not good. Tamara's like, but it all worked out well. Everybody hugged and was crying. He can be here this morning.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
No.
Don't give up.
No.
Anybody else on Job? Well, basically, the first chapter basically tells you the whole story. So I'm going to read it I've got it in the King James and the NIV. I'm going to read it in the NIV because it kind of gives you a little more of a picture. Okay? So it says in verse 1, in the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright, and he feared God and he shunned evil. So right there it tells you who Job was. What kind of man he was. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He owned 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys, and had a large number of servants. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East. Wow. I mean, this guy was pretty well off. His sons used to hold feasts in their homes on their birthdays, and they would invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. When a period of feasting had run its course, Job would make arrangements for them to be purified. Early in the morning, he would sacrifice a burnt offering for each of them, thinking, perhaps my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. This was Job's regular custom. So Job was so afraid that his children, through their drinking and partying that they did, he would go out and sacrifice offerings to take care of the sins of his children, because he did not want any of them to be hurt. And it says this was Job's regular custom. Apparently they had some pretty good parties. Maybe weekly, Friday, Saturday, Sunday parties. I don't know. It says, one day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord said to Satan, where have you come from? Satan answered the Lord, from roaming throughout the earth, going back and forth on it. Then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. Do you think God's ever said that to Satan about you? Wow. Does Job fear God for nothing? Satan replied. Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You have blessed the work of his hand so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But now stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face. The Lord said to Satan, very well, then, everything he has in your power, but on the man himself do not lay a finger. Then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. One day, when Job's son and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house, a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys were grazing nearby, and the Sabians attacked and made off with them. They put the servants to the sword, and I'm the only one who escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, the fire of God fell from the heavens and burned up the sheep and the servants, and I'm the only one who has escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another messenger came and said, the Chaldeans formed three raiding parties, swept down on your camels, and made off with them. They put the servants to the sword, and I'm the only one who has escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, yet another messenger came and said, your sons and daughters were feasting and drinking wine at the oldest brother's house, when suddenly a mighty wind swept in from the desert and struck the four corners of the house. It had collapsed on them, and they are dead. And I am the only one who has escaped to tell you. At this, Job got up, tore his robe, and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground and worshiped. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised. In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. Wow. This is kind of like your life, Pam, a few years ago, wasn't it? Just seemed like, and you and Amy, just seemed like this bam, bam, bam. But never once did I see you guys curse God. No. I'm sure there was a lot of questions.
I had a lot of questions and a lot of anger for a while.
Yeah. And I'm so sure, and as we studied Job, he did too. He had questions. He got mad. But never did he ever curse God. And that is so, so hard. I think many of us can feel like, okay, Lord, if you put one more thing, if you do one more thing, I don't know if I can make it. Don't know if I can make it. But all in one day, this happened to Job. I'm sure my possessions, I would not care, but my kids, my family, yes. That would have been the last straw. I mean, I think of this family that lost in that wreck and those people that were shot in Walmart just going to go buy school supplies for their kids. Their life has changed forever. It's tough. And God sometimes does this. We will find later on that not bad things happen to us because, yeah, some things that we do. But a lot of times we haven't done anything. The place of the book of Job in the Old Testament. Job is one of the five books commonly referred to as the book of poetry. And these include Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon. So all five of those books are books of poetry. Because they were written in like poetic style, that is different from the narrative style that most of the other books of the Bible is. The five books offer something unique to each one of us. Job teaches us how to suffer. Psalms teaches us how to pray. Proverbs teaches us how to act. Ecclesiastes teaches us how to enjoy life. And Sogan Solomon teaches us how to love. And I think when I read those, I mean, that's cool. They do help us with that. The dating, the writing, and the author of the book of Job, most people don't know. They don't know really basically when it was written. They think that maybe the author was Job, or it could have been Solomon, it could have been Isaiah, it could have been Hezekiah, could have been Jeremiah's scribe. But we know that it was, whoever the author was, he was a loyal Hebrew that loved God and saw how that God had directed Job's life. They think maybe it was written before Moses, and some people think it was written during Solomon's time. Really and truly, it doesn't matter. We just know that it's a historical book because it's quoted in a number of other books. Because it's quoted in Ezekiel. Job is mentioned along with Noah and Daniel. It's mentioned in the New Testament. James, the brother of Jesus, will refer to Job as an example of perseverance. So this is a true, this is not a fairy tale. This happened to a man named Job. So the purpose of the book is to answer that age-old question: why does God allow the righteous to suffer? Have you ever asked that question? Why, if I'm doing everything I can for the Lord, why do I suffer?
Maybe you're not doing everything you need to do, and you have to get closer to Him.
Could be.
If you just moved down the road, how many times would you pray?
You wouldn't grow, would you?
No.
Yeah. And I do believe a lot of things that come in our life are things to make us grow, to let us depend more on God, know that He's going to take care of things, it's all going to work out okay. Sometimes there are things that happen in our life that we brought on ourselves. Sometimes things happen to us that are brought on by others. You know, we're not an island. Things that we do affect other people. So the main thing is that it's Job did not really find out a direct answer for why it all happened. We just know that he depended upon the Lord, and he never got mad at God enough to walk away from Him. Where a lot of times people that have struggles walk away. Okay, I'm not going to have anything to do with God anymore. I don't know if you've got family members like that or no friends like that. There's a number of people I know that something happened in their life and they don't go back to church. They don't want to have anything to God. But the answer to the question, how should the righteous suffer, is that even though that Job's question and complaints almost come close to charging God, you know, when the three friends start ragging on him. I mean, these were his three close friends, and they ragged on him. They kept, I mean, for this chapter, this book is 40 chapters long, 42 chapters long. And a lot has happened in chapter 1, and then the rest of it is basically his friends come and console him, and then they start questioning why. You know, what did you do? What did you do to make God mad? Why don't you just, and then it's even his wife. What does his wife tell him? Why don't you just curse God and die? Wow. You know, she's probably suffering herself. So, but this book will show us how the righteous should bear up under suffering. So a lot of lessons that we can learn from this book. Number one, what we can learn is it defends the absolute glory and perfection of God. It's set forth in Psalms 18:3. It says, when things happen to us, Psalms 18:3 says, I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised. Job praised God when he heard all those. And God is deserving of our praise. Even though bad things happen to us, we still need to praise God and thank him for the blessings that he denies us. Satan said to God that if you do this, if you take everything away from God, Job will curse you. He'll curse you to your face. And Satan was denied this because Job proved him wrong. He did not curse God. So the next thing that we learn from this book is the question of suffering is addressed. It says, why do we suffer? Or who or what does it come from? Why doesn't God do something, with these problems that we have? But not all the questions are answered, but some of the important ones are. Number one, man is unable to subject the painful experiences of God's experience of human existence and understand that God's workings are beyond our ability to even fathom what's going on. We have no clue what's really and truly what's going on and on this earth and up in heaven. We just need to learn to trust in God no matter the circumstances. The next question that we answered is suffering is not always the result of personal sin. Job proves this because Job had done nothing wrong. And then suffering may be allowed as a complement to one's spirituality. God allows Job to suffer to prove to Satan what kind of man he really was. So sometimes we are faced things because God's going to say, I know you're going to make it through. I know you're going to prove me that you are going to be strong, and he knows us better than we know ourselves. The next thing that we learn is that the book paints a beautiful picture of patience. Remember the saying, the patience of Job? You need to have the patience of Job. I hear something keep clicking. What's the one saying is never pray for patience? Because if you pray for patience, God's going to give it to you.
Mm-hmm. Tribulation worth patience.
Yeah. Yeah. So Job in his tribulation was patient and on God and was able to work through everything that the trials and everything that he went through. And then the last thing, one of the other things is that the book also prepares the way for the coming of Jesus Christ. In it, in chapter 19, and I thought this was pretty cool, in chapter 19, verse 25. And this book is so tiny. is that right?
1925. I know that my Lord liveth,
yeah,
and that he shall stand at the latter days upon the earth.
Yeah. He knew that there was going to be a Redeemer. And he knew that his Redeemer liveth, and his faith was in his Redeemer that would one day come. So it's a great picture of the coming of Jesus Christ in the book of Job. So the book of Job is outlined in different things. His distress, Job and his distress, all the things that happened to him, and then his defense. There was three rounds of his friends that came and kind of like three boxing rounds. his friends coming and telling him what he did wrong and what he needed to do. And then there was a young man by Elihu who will speak and will defend Job and contradict Job's friends with everything and will show Job and proclaim God's justice and goodness and majesty to Job. So you need one of those friends like that will come and build you up in those times of need, not tear you down. And then Job, his deliverance, even though God has humbled Job, then God will honor Job and give him back, like Robert said, twice as much as he had before.
He got twice as many cattle and mm-hmm. sheep and oxen and all this. He got 10 more kids. Well, what about his wife? Was it the same wife?
I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't ever tell.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. So he got two wives?
I don't know.
He didn't get 10 more wives, did he?
He was the first one when she come over there cursing God.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess back then they thought the only way you died is if you curse God. I don't know. You know, you in the field I work in, you see elderly people that suffer, you know, and they suffer and they suffer. And I don't work in a nursing home where you see them, especially with Alzheimer's, just crawl up into a little ball and you just think, why are they still here? Why are they suffering? But there's a purpose. I tell my little people, and they say, oh, I wish God would just take me. And I said, well, God's not ready for you to go home. You still have a purpose to be here, and that purpose may to make me smile, you know, to make me have a good day. So, you know, we all have a purpose if we're still here on this earth. But this book is pretty cool, too, because in the first chapter, we get a glimpse of what's going on in the unseen world. Can you imagine? Have you ever thought about what's going on in heaven? Apparently, Satan can come up to the throne and accuse us.
I wonder, does Satan approach the throne of God more than we do in prayer?
That's a thought, isn't it? Wow. But we see Satan come to the throne of God and talk to him. I'm sure have you got that one person that just on you? You know? Do you think God rolls his eyes when Satan comes back? You're back. You know you're not going to win. You know? It also shows us that God gave Satan free reign in Job's life within limits. Satan cannot take our salvation. You may think that he can, but he cannot take our salvation. If you are truly saved, he cannot take it from you. He may beat you down to where you think that you're not saved and God doesn't love you and care for you, but he cannot take your salvation. Number three, Job feels the anguish we all feel in difficult times. When you look at Job, I think we can picture ourselves. Now, we may not have lost as much as Job has lost. Many of you have lost kids and parents and all. But we can understand that what Job went through, just from the anguish of the circumstances. Number four, Job understandably begins to defend himself against the charges his friends throw out at him. You know, when somebody is attacking you, I don't think that we should attack them back, but I think we should stand up for ourselves. And all. Number five, Job's friends continue to demonstrate what not to say to someone who is suffering. So when you know somebody is suffering, read Job, read what his friends were doing, and don't do that. Okay? Love on them. Pray with them. Many times you may not have any words, anything that would give them comfort, but just knowing you're there, you love them, and say a word of prayer with them can give them the peace that they need. So don't do like Job's friends. You know, I always love the people are so, you know, people don't know, really think what they're doing when they do it and somebody passes away and they say, well, God wanted them more than you know, they were needed down here. And you're going, are you saying I did not want my loved one? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, you're really going to need to watch what you say. But, you know, just if you can't think of it, just say I love you and I'm praying for you. Yeah. In spite of his despair, Job clings to God and understands that there's going to be a Redeemer one of these days that rights all the wrongs in this world. Number seven, we start round three where his friend's name was Elepsa and Bildad, and what was the other name? Where are they? Sorry. Job? No. Zophar. Those are his three friends' names. And Bildad speaks for the final time, and Job responds passionately to his friends with increased intensity to help them understand that he was seeking to understand God, but he was not going to curse God. That he was not going to say, I don't want to have anything to do with God anymore. He was struggling to understand what God meant in his life, but he still had enough faith in God to say God knows what's going on. Number eight, Job will plead his case before the only judge that matters, and that's God. So if things are going through your life and you've been judged wrongly, realize that the only judge that matters is God. And then God will speak in his final, he will answer. Remarkable and powerful answer God gives Job is that I'm here, I directed, I took care of you, even though it all looks bad, I still love you. And I think that helps us to know that God loves us no matter what is going on in our life, and that we should love God. And then, like Robert says at the very end, he was rewarded twice and got twice as much as he had before. And I'm just wondering how his kids had to have been pretty old, because they had their own families, own homes. So it makes you wonder how old of a man this Job was. So probably he was probably at least, if his kids were in their 20s, he was probably at least 40. And so he was starting all over again with the little babies in the house. Pam, how does that work? I know. That's the reason why God gives kids to young people. Because they're used to not sleeping. But a great study on the book of Job. The last verse in the Bible, in the book of Job, says, "And after this, Job lived 140 years. He saw his children and their children to the fourth generation, and so he died old and full of years." He was blessed. He was blessed. And God wants to pour out his blessings. Job's not he is just not the norm. He is the norm. God wants to bless all of us. I was trying to get that out right. He wants to bless all of us in